What's up, everybody? Thank you for tuning in to another episode of the All In Podcast, episode 43. And if you're tuning in to the live stream right now on Facebook or YouTube, as you can see on your screens, Mike is not with us today. So before we get into anything, we just want to send prayers out to his younger brother, Tito, who was in a car accident, which is why Mike is not on the show today. You know, keep your thoughts and prayers out to Tito and the rest of the family while, you know, he is in the hospital. A good friend of the podcast, a supporter of the podcast. So we wish him the best of luck. But we are, so since Mike isn't here, I have gathered a dream team for you guys today. My guy, Sean Turner, is back once again joining the pod. How you doing, Brody?
I'm good, man. How y'all doing?
Chilling, man, chilling. As you can see on your screen, or if you're tuning into the audio, you can't see him on your screen. My guy Todd Fetzko is in the building. He has returned. It's been a while, man. How you been?
It's been a while, man. Good. Enjoying these playoffs and just, you know, I'm loving it. I'm loving it. But game one, we'll get into it. But, oh, it hurt. It hurt.
Certainly, certainly. And speaking of hurt, the newest guest that we have on the pod today is my young point guard Padawan from Columbia High School, Carter Houck. He's a senior at Columbia. He's joining the podcast today, and he's a Heat fan. That's why I mentioned the hurt. So he's here to explain why his team is so bad today. What's up, man?
Whoa. I mean, that's a little crazy. But honestly, going into the playoffs, I expected a lot more games the way this one went. And it sounds crazy, but throughout the regular season, we had 10 or 12 games, even when I went to Coop, for Jimmy Butler's return to Philly, where they just played 4 minutes of good basketball and got dominated the rest of the game. And I'm dealing with Philly fans. But yeah, I mean, we'll get more into it. But like this, it's actually something that they avoided and could come back on runs. And yesterday was a different animal in L.A.
Yeah. So I do owe you an apology because I said they were a 6 seed. I was 1 seed off, but yeah,
you weren't off on that.
I was off. I was wrong. And I certainly didn't expect them to get to the finals, although they were a dark horse for me, at least to beat the Bucks in the second round. So I gave them the credit, especially after they signed Iguodala, is when the Heat and they beat the breaks off of my Sixers. That's when I was kind of like, all right, this team might be real.
And Crowder.
Yeah, right. And the Crowder trade. So, you know, game one was pretty bad, which we'll get to. But I think today we got to start today's conversation with Kyrie Irving, who made some pretty interesting comments about, and the main one that caught headlines was that KD is the first player that he's played with that he can look down and say, that guy can hit clutch shots too, or in something of that nature. He also went on to say that the coach's position isn't really that important and that Spencer Dinwiddie or KD could be the coach, things of that nature, you know, which is interesting to hear after they just hired Steve Nash. So, Todd, we'll start with you. What were your thoughts on the clutch comments and then also the comments about the importance of coaching?
Well, my first thought was Kyrie, the content king, always giving us stuff to talk about. So shout out, Kyrie.
Yeah.
I just not surprised. I mean, overall, I just don't take any of the comments that seriously, you know, coming from – he has a history of kind of outlandish claims, comments, whatever you want to say. But
yeah,
I just think my first thought really was – just everywhere he goes, there seems to be kind of like a crater left when he's gone. We see the impact, like Boston, just having the positive role model of Kemba and the impacts that had. And I just think more of the same from Kyrie, just disappointed. I just think overall, you know, before this Nets team, it has so much potential. And already we're going into the year, he's making weird comments about the coach, just these comments in general. And just I'm really interested to see if this Nets team can really be something special like they should be able to, or if they're gonna have similar problems like we found in Boston last year or 2 years ago.
Yeah, so you know, I thought it was interesting as well, especially when he talks about the clutch shots. Like, is that a dig at LeBron? Is he taking a shot at LeBron, Sean?
He said that is the first clutch player that he's played with.
Yeah, first clutch player or first person he could look down and say that guy can hit those shots too. In reference to clutch shots,
I'm gonna disagree. Yeah, I'm gonna disagree. And hey, I love getting me some LeBron jokes off, but this is just not true. I certainly understand him saying KD is a little bit more capable in those big moments. I get that because his game is so versatile. He can really give you any shot from anywhere, and I get that. But LeBron can hit those big shots. Now, of course, in the past, he's deferred it, and I think it's usually deferring in probably a smarter basketball play. But no, I already said, I'm not – like Tyler said, I'm not putting too much stock into that. Not having a head coach, I don't even think I really want to talk about that. I just don't think that. I don't believe that at all. So that I don't know. I'm not gonna go too far into that. I just think that's some malarkey that he's pulling up. But no, I do think KD is probably more clutch. I could definitely vouch for that. Not the first clutch player that he's played with, or the only clutch player he's played with. So no, I'm not on board with that.
Carter, what are your thoughts?
I mean, I think he forced his way out of Cleveland, and I think he was trying to be the big dog. He ended up going to Boston, which probably wasn't the big dog city he wanted to go to, but I think ever since then he's been taking slight digs, and he's always the guy to say outlandish stuff. I think like something that's lost, not lost in a game seven, but he hits the great shot. But I mean, that LeBron block is clutch. I don't know, I would consider that a clutch play. He always makes good plays. Like, yeah. I think Kyrie's just trying to get in the headlines. He's always doing that, and same thing with the head coach. I mean, that's just he thinks the earth's flat. I don't even want to like we'll keep going.
Yeah, I mean, these are certainly outlandish comments. First, I'll address the clutch shot one. I think not only is that a dig at LeBron, I think it's a dig at Jason Tatum. Like, if you ask me, Jason Tatum and the Celtics went to an Eastern Conference Finals with you hurt, and he was the one taking those shots down the stretch. So for you to come – and then you came back the next year, and I believe they lost in either the first or second round. I can't remember. But you underachieved – with you returning to a young core that had just went to the Eastern Conference Finals. So for him to kind of make those comments, I think it's also a dig at Jason Tatum, or it's disrespectful at least to Jason Tatum, in my opinion, because that was someone who you kind of handicapped when you came back. And I think we're seeing that now after the season Jason Tatum just had and the season that he had while Kyrie was hurt. The other thing is, you know, LeBron statistically has one of the highest field goal percentages on shots under 10 seconds and has made some of the most clutch shots under 10 seconds in Cleveland. You know, so I think Kyrie is forever haunted by this shadow that he's in, you know, under LeBron, of course, even though he hit this massive shot in game seven, like he still has this like idea in his mind that he's Kobe. You know what I mean? He was someone who is an alpha who was held back to being a beta because he had another dominant player with him while he was younger. Well, you haven't proven that you're actually an alpha. Like wherever he's gone and been the best player, those teams have not been good. They've either been number one in the lottery or underachieved. If we look at the Celtics or even the Nets record when he was hurt for a period of time was actually better. They made the playoffs without you. You know what I mean? So I don't know that – I think that's in the back of his mind. And, you know, I don't know if that's where these comments are coming from or maybe he just was trying to talk up KD. I don't know. But I don't think they're accurate at all. And
I think it haunts him that his best years of his career was with LeBron as a teammate. And I think he's been trying ever since then to prove it, but he's doing it in the wrong ways. He's trying to get in the headlines where he should be going out there getting 30 and winning games. You got to win games and win playoff series.
Yeah. And to address the coaching comment, so I mean, me personally, as a coach, I think that's ridiculous to say that what we do on the sidelines doesn't matter. And granted, in the NBA it doesn't. I think high school and college coaches mean a lot more than NBA coaches do. Like, don't get me wrong, a lot of those guys are pretty much coaching themselves out on the floor, or they have someone who's an extension of the coach. But you can't sit here and tell me that someone like Greg Popovich being on the sideline doesn't matter. Eric Spoelstra being on the sideline doesn't matter. Like, because, you know, granted, you can have all the talent in the world. We've seen it, and not get over the hump because you don't have the right staff, you know what I mean, that knows how to utilize the talent that's on the floor. So to say that you could just throw anybody in that chair and coach a team that has Kyrie and Kevin Durant, that's not the case. I think these two still will have their own issues figuring out when to defer to each other. Like, Steph and KD had those issues. Now, granted, they were so good, it didn't negatively impact them. They could still win games while they figured it out. I don't know that the Nets are quite that good. You know what I mean? There's going to be early season struggles while these two figure out, like, who's going to be the go-to guy. And if you ask me, I think what Kyrie's statement actually brings up is, like, who do you go to in the clutch moments? Like, if it's not going to be you, are you going to have a problem with that? Because if you ask me, I'm going to KD in the clutch. That's a six. Granted, don't get me wrong, I like Kyrie in the clutch. I love him in the clutch, actually. But if you're asking me to pick between a 6'3 point guard and a 7-foot sniper who moves like a two guard, I'm going to take the 7-foot sniper who moves like a two guard. Like, that's just who also hits clutch shots. Yeah. That just makes more sense. Are you going to be okay deferring in those situations is really going to be the big question there. I'm not so sure that he is. And maybe he's worried about being back in a second fiddle type role. And that's where these comments are coming from.
Maybe.
I don't think so. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, so whether this was about LeBron or not, we can never be 100% sure, but I think we can tell that LeBron thought it was about him because today he brought up about, they were talking about him and AD's relationship, and they said they work so well together because he's not jealous. They're not jealous of each other. So I think there could be some slight digs back and forth.
There's no way that's not a dig.
Right.
There's no way that's not a dig. After what Kyrie just said. So, listen, you know, and he's not wrong. I think, AD's the best player that LeBron's ever played with. And granted, at this phase of his career, it's probably easier for LeBron to defer to someone like AD. But you can see it between those two that they're both like, you know, whoever needs to take over the game will, and whoever needs to take the back seat will. Maybe it's easier to do that with a big man in today's NBA, but who knows?
I think that's the biggest thing, is this is the first real true big man that is this great LeBron's ever played with. And it's harder when, you know, LeBron wants the ball in his hands constantly. And, you know, whether it's D-Wade or Kyrie or whoever, it's kind of, they're probably, the balancing act is a little more difficult to find.
Exactly. So let's
stop being disrespectful. Y'all act like LeBron ain't playing with K-Love. Come on now.
I'm going to take that as sarcasm.
Come on now. All right. I can see if you're picking AD over K-Love. I get that. But it's not like a huge gap.
Between AD and K-Love?
Nah. I don't think so.
I'm one of the biggest Wade guys that is out there.
Hey, yo, don't do that. You ain't gonna cut me out.
I'm one of the biggest Wade fans there is out there, but I honestly think Anthony Davis and LeBron is probably the best duo he's had in his career, especially where AD is at this point in his career, because when the big three was formed, Wade and Bosh were not what Wade and Bosh were 4 years before that.
Yeah.
I mean, Bosch was still pretty good. He had to take the biggest backseat because he was the big man. But D-Wade certainly wasn't the same player. Now, prime D-Wade, we talking 06 through 08 D-Wade, we having a way different discussion.
And that's where AD is.
Was still
even all the way through there.
After that, the knees just gave out.
The knees were gone, right.
Yeah, LeBron told the 2011 finals. It wasn't Wade.
Right, exactly. So, but even 2011 Wade, I don't think I'm taking over right now KD. I mean, Anthony Davis. Yeah, AD, sorry.
And either way, the way they complement each other is, I mean, they are a match made in heaven. It is unreal to watch.
Because who has a front court that has defenders that can guard both of them? Which I guess this leads us into our next topic. The Lakers won game one by a country mile, 116-98, which, if you watch the first 6 minutes of the game, you probably didn't expect that. The Heat jumped on them 23-10. But after the Lakers took that first time out, they never looked back after, you know, getting punched in the mouth early. So Carter, as the resident Heat fan on the podcast today, Why don't you tell us what went wrong in this one?
Well, like I brought up earlier, I mean, runs have been happening all throughout the Bucks and Celtics series, 12-0s, 12-0s, even in times in the Celtics series, you know, it literally would just be a Heat 12-0, a Celtics 12-0. I think, you know, as this run was going on, though, they started to realize we are not stopping these dominant players like AD and LeBron. And something that was much different that I picked up on, and you guys can maybe touch on this, is on defense with the against the Celtics, we were able to hide guys like Hero and Robinson on the lower part of the zone. Mm-hmm. Yesterday, first half, and the numbers came out at the half, Hero had like a minus 30 in the first half. That is so bad. And it's because Hero's getting switched out onto LeBron. And I mean, a 20-year-old kid, I don't care how good he's been this playoffs, he's not stopping LeBron. LeBron's getting the rim every time. And the Lakers did such a good job at finding mismatches. There's always going to be mismatches when you have AD and LeBron, but they found mismatches and there was no stop. And then offensively, it just there was not enough cutting and ball movement, which is what we've been doing all year and all playoffs that's got us to this spot.
Ty, what were your thoughts on the game? What happened? What went wrong for the Heat?
So first off, the Lakers had that stretch there where they just shot. I mean, if the Lakers are shooting the way they shot for that stretch there, I mean, you're not beating them. It's that simple. But and they did kind of fall off there. They let off the gas a little bit at the end, so the shooting numbers don't reflect. But I mean, they were unreal. When you have Danny Green, KCP, Kuzma, Caruso all hitting shots, they're just not going to beat that team. But ultimately, I think that you can contribute, I mean, a little bit to it is Miami has a problem. That zone, I just don't think is going to – like, I thought maybe the zone could give this team a little bit of problems. But AD creeping in that middle, LeBron is a maestro, picking it apart, finding anybody he wants. And then, yeah, so that comes back to the problem where Duncan laid a goose egg last night because it's hard to put him out there, him and Hero, if they can't play the zone. And if they're playing man, that is – I mean, it's just it is not looking good. And as far as like adjustments, I am not sure exactly how the Heat can, you know, can counter this stuff. I mean, it's going to be tough. And as long as if AD is getting 30 every night and LeBron's doing what he's doing and at least one Lakers role player steps up, it's going to be not a very long series.
Yeah. Sean, what were your thoughts?
I'm on board with Todd. They had trouble containing a couple of those guys. So Caldwell Pope ended up with 13. Danny Green had 11. Caruso had 10. The zone, I don't know if it's quite as effective in this series because, like Todd said, like LeBron can find a pass just about anywhere. AD is going to kind of find his spots. And AD, the last series, when you saw that Houston went that with that small ball route, AD a lot of the times got the ball faced up and saw the entire floor. So he's another guy that can also make some good passes out of that position too. I think they're doing a good job at breaking down that zone. So, I mean, I'm going to see how they come back from that. But I would say they got those two guys is obviously the ones that they have to slow down. I'm not sure that zone definitely does that. So, yeah, I'm on board with Todd. And then they got a lot of good guard play from, like, those three people that I named. You got Kyle Kuzma getting in the mix, scoring as well. So, yeah, you have a tough time defending that three. And the Lakers aren't a big-time three-point team coming into the playoffs. So, I would say when you give up threes as many as they did last night, I would say it's tough to beat that team, especially with AD on the glass, how they did with Bam out for a little bit of that game. So, yeah, it's tough to beat that team.
Yeah, I think Carter brings up a good point that it was hard for them to hide their two best shooters on the bottom of the zone like they got away with doing against a smaller Celtics team. And it showed on the boards, 62-40, Lakers out-rebounded the Heat in this game. And then you combine that with them hitting 15 threes. When the Lakers make more than 14 threes, they are 21-3 this year. So like you said, you know, when they shoot it that well, you're probably not going to win. And then you combine that with losing on the boards by 22, you're certainly in trouble. And this is something that me and Mike talked about last episode was with the zone, you know, one of the negatives of the zone already is rebounding. Because you're not in position to simply box out the person next to you. You have to, it's a little harder to find a body, you know, and then you're also talking about a zone that has Hero and Duncan Robinson at the bottom of it at any given point. You know, those guys aren't on the floor to grab rebounds. So especially against a Lakers team that already has a size advantage. So I think that all showed, I think really if you're the Heat, you're probably banking that the Lakers aren't going to hit 14 or more threes for the rest of the series, or you're hoping. And maybe instead of the zone, you hide Harrow and Duncan Robinson, maybe on, you know, Caldwell Pope and other guys to, and maybe have them in more help side defense than normal. And I think you still have to live with Caruso, Pope, you know, Kuzma, those guys shooting from the perimeter, because you obviously can't live with Anthony Davis and LeBron getting to the basket. So maybe that's the adjustment, which I guess we'll kind of get to later on in the show. But yeah, there's not really a matchup on this Heat team for Anthony Davis.
And that's, I already said, that's what I was going to mention. If they do switch it up out of that zone, say they maybe try man.
Yeah.
I think the fouls skyrocket because this one was only 15 and 18. So they were able to throw some guys at him, stay out of foul trouble. The Lakers team was
already had two quick ones too.
Yeah. And the Lakers are so big. I don't know. I already said, I'm like Todd said, like this duo is top tier. So I don't know what might make have up their sleeve that they're going to throw out. And me and Coop was talking about it. I think it was off air about who they were going to throw at Anthony Davis. I seen a ton of people on him. He had Iggy on him for a little bit. He had Crowder on him for a little bit. Even Jimmy switched on him a couple of times, and he's too hard to guard. He has pretty much every trick in the book up his sleeve when he's down there on that low block. So It's tough. It's a tough team to guard.
Yeah, I mean, Crowder's your best bet because you can't really put Bam on him, especially not to start games. You need him to just literally box out the White. And also, You don't want him picking up two fouls, which he did anyway. But He's probably more likely to do so guarding AD. So your best bet is Crowder, who's given up significant height advantage there. So you don't really love that matchup. So, you know, that's tough. And then you combine it with Dragic and Bam, both left last night's game with injuries. It looks like Dragic is done for the series with a plantar fasciitis injury. Bam's status is in doubt. It looked like he aggravated a previous shoulder injury that he already had. I'm assuming he's going to come back for now. But if these two are out, do the Heat have any chance? Or if just Dragic is out, do they still have a chance? We'll start with Carter.
I'm going to go – I mean, look, Dragic and Bam injuries, I'll sum it up for you. In a pick-and-roll league, that is our Heat's best pick-and-roll option. Dragic is our best shot creator. Bam is the best roller. And Bam does so much for him besides that. But I mean, I really don't know. I mean, you're now putting in Kendrick Nunn, who's barely played. You know, you're putting him in at least getting minutes. Maybe Hero will start instead. And Myers Leonard is going to have to get playing time. I mean, look, and Myers Leonard is one of the worst rebounding seven footers I've ever seen. So we really, the chance we have in this series is those two injuries. And I've actually heard reports that Dragic isn't totally out, but I can't imagine he plays with a torn something.
Right.
But without those two guys, I don't see where this five game.
Yeah, I think it makes it, especially if Bam is out, I think the Bam injury would mean a lot more. If Bam's out, they're done. But and it's not even close. They're already thin on the front line trying to deal with the size that the Lakers have. And you take Bam out of that equation, you have no chance. So, Sean, what's your thoughts here? Do you think this series lasts without Bam or Dragic in the lineup?
Dragic, yes. Bam, absolutely not. I already said the way they looked last night. Honestly, I was riding for Miami. I already say it's always nice to see the underdog prevail and win the chip. So I took a hot take and said Miami in six. The way the Lakers looked last night, it could be in five without Bam. It looks like four. So yeah. Chris Dunn, I think he can come in and be serviceable. Honestly, it was surprising to me that we didn't even see a glimpse of Miles Leonard, or at least more in the fashion that we saw previously. So, like Carter said, I think we're gonna have to see Miles Leonard. I would say at least get a big body out there, and then maybe hope that Bam stays out of trouble messing with AD. I don't know. That's like I said, like those are some tough guys to guard. So I mean, I think they can maybe extend it to five with Bam, keeping Bam, no Dragic, but without Bam and Dragic, I think it'd be a really short series.
Great. Todd, yeah. You on the same boat?
Yeah, I mean, I also picked the Heat and six, or sorry, the Lakers in six. Dragic has been incredible these playoffs. You know, for a guy that didn't start the entire year, to be able to come into the playoffs and deliver the performances he delivered has been unreal. You know, and he doesn't even always close the game, but just the big shot when they're going on a run, whatever it might be, that guy answers. And he's a primary ball handler. You're going to have to see a lot more Tyler Hero, Kendrick Nunn now going to have to handle the ball more, Jimmy Butler for the whole game. I don't think that favors the Heat. I think at least between these two injuries, at least you can say Kendrick Nunn, he did start the year. So Kendrick Nunn has some experience at least playing, not in the playoffs, but yeah. I think that drop off between Bam and Myers Leonard or Kelly Olynyk right now is so much more severe. Yeah. And I don't see, you know, without Bam being 100%, it is just, it's bad.
Yeah.
It's just not, they don't have that matchup for him. And I think that if Bam can't play that defense, if he can't get in that pick and roll with Dragic, especially, I mean, that's just so many points per game. That's more pressure on the defense that they're just not going to be able to apply to him.
All right. So let's talk about the Lakers a little bit here. If we look at the series, both LeBron and AD were great last night. I think LeBron was a little more valuable to the – or maybe AD, I don't know. But who's more important in this series, assuming everybody's healthy, between LeBron and AD?
Go ahead, Ty. You go ahead first.
More important to the Lakers?
To the Lakers, yeah.
I think – that's tough. I mean, I think you have to go AD just because of the matchup problem. He's younger. I think this series is going to be won and lost based on the performances that he gives. I mean, I think at this point puts the most pressure on the defense. And also, I mean, literally on when Miami's on offense, I mean, he was a monster defensively last night. And I just think that overall, the impact that he's having right now is probably going to be more impactful. I think Miami is more worried about the impact of, you know, if AD starts getting going early, that kind of stuff. I think Miami's primary focus is to at least deny. I mean, if we're limiting LeBron to outside shots or at least, you know, twos, I think you win. But if you're giving AD up stuff up at the rim, it's just you just can't compete with that. That's automatic.
Long night, definitely ahead of you. Yeah, I'm going AD too. He can, I would say, LeBron is going to have his way regardless. Like, you're going to see him get his regardless, but AD getting to the bucket early, getting to the foul line, knocking down shots, getting to a rhythm. That's a guy that's going to be, honestly, if I had to take somebody that I think would win MVP, I would take AD. And I think this is going to be a little bit skewed because the phenomenal numbers that LeBron is going to put up. So it's possible that he could take that MVP. But honestly, about who's the most important to this team and the success that this team has, I think it's Anthony Davis. And it's because of those matchup problems that he causes, obviously accompanied with LeBron, that dynamic duo is a very tough duo to stop. So I will go AD is probably more important through this, honestly, this playoff run, especially with them playing now another smaller team when we don't see like Miles Leonard. And then you also go through the Rockets as well. So, yeah, AD gets my vote on that one.
Yeah, see, for me, I also say AD. And this is like the one series where I'm actually okay with him being at the four because this is where he generates that the biggest matchup problem for pretty much the entire postseason. And actually towards the end of the bubble, I was an advocate for him moving to the five, which they did against Houston. And even did, you know, he plays that spot a lot throughout the game. But in this case, they really need him more at the four because their size is the difference in this series with him being at the four and Dwight being at the five. because Bam is essentially just occupied into guarding Dwight rather than guarding AD, which is exactly what you want. And you force a guy like Jay Crowder or, you know, depending on what lineup you have in the game, Andre Iguodala to be on the floor trying to guard Anthony Davis. And those guys aren't really equipped to stop him. So, you know, and it showed they destroyed the Heat on the glass last night. And I think that's where, even if the Lakers don't hit 15 threes for the rest of the series, what they're going to do on the glass is going to make up for that ultimately. It probably won't result in, you know, 20-point wins for them going forward, but it would still be enough to win them games throughout this series, even if the Lakers don't shoot it as well, which is why I think AD is the more important player in this series. We know what we're going to get out of LeBron, right? Like, when LeBron steps on the floor, you might as well chalk it, or you might as well just write in a stat line with 27,
10, you know, seven, 10.
Yeah, 27, 10, and 10 or 7, whatever. You might as well write that into his box score. That's where you should start his box score at, right? And, you know, in this series, Anthony Davis has to be the guy who's dominating on the offensive end for them to win this series faster, I should say.
Yeah, but I would say along with that, the gap that they won by last night is reduced just a little bit. And some of that, if they're not hitting those 14, 15 threes a game, is closer. So maybe they hold it to maybe around like 20. But then you also had Bam, who had a pretty bad last game. He only got 8 points, obviously, because he was banged up. What you mentioned earlier, even if he comes back and maybe he's not full health, that could even impact them as well to not being able to push this, because he's not going to be able to give you 100%. So that could even lessen the amount of games that this series goes in the first place, which is why, honestly, still moving from not having Dragic, I think it cuts down because of how well he's played. I don't know if that necessarily moves the needle too much if he's only able to go in there and give you 75%. So yeah, we'll see.
So, Carter, more important to the series, LeBron or AD?
I'm gonna go LeBron here, just for the simple fact that I think LeBron remove LeBron from the series, I think that he could key in on Anthony Davis. If you saw last night, they were sending doubles at both of these guys. I just think LeBron would impact the game, and he's been in the finals so much. Anthony Davis was destroying, but an Anthony Davis-led team, I mean, we've seen where that's taken. We've also seen where a LeBron-led team has taken teams. So I think that's the biggest point there. And watching the game last night and also watching the Heat play the Bucks, there's such a big difference between LeBron and Giannis. It's not even funny because it's just how you can key in and send three guys at Giannis when he's driving is so beneficial. He can't make the passes LeBron can. And it just shows why LeBron is a top three player all the time. And it's just very impressive to watch. I'm just going to go with LeBron over AD there.
Yeah. So adjustments for Miami headed into game two. Todd, you're Spo. You got to figure out a way to get your team back into the series. What are you doing in game two to try to steal a win?
Well, first thing first, without Dragic most likely, and maybe without Bam, you got to get your shooters going. So I'm telling Duncan Robinson, Tyler Hero, I'm running as many actions for them early as possible just to get them hot. I mean, I think that's their best chance. If shooter gets hot, whatever it might be, just get it up, put those threes up, and we're going to have to live or die by it.
Yeah.
On the defensive end, I think you got to stick with the zone. The zone has got them here thus far. Stick with the zone for a little bit. If you keep getting killed, get out of it. And then ultimately, you're going to have to live and die with – I mean, LeBron is going to hunt those mismatches. It doesn't matter where you try to hide him. LeBron is so great. He's going to get Hero in a pick and roll. He's going to get Duncan in a pick and roll, whoever it might be, Kendrick Nunn in a pick and roll. And then ultimately, like we saw in the Houston series with the Lakers, they're going to have to send those doubles, whether it's later in the shot clock, whatever it might be, just force the ball out of AD LeBron hands. And if you're giving up open shots to Caruso, Kuz, KCP, I mean, that's the way that if I'm Spo, that's the way I'm going to make the Lakers beat me. Ultimately, get the ball out of their hands as much as possible. I mean, nothing new there. Get the ball out of their hands, and if the other guys can beat me, that's just the way it's going to have to be.
Yeah.
Coach Sean, adjustments for game two.
Yeah, I'm on board with Todd. I think probably the biggest thing is getting the ball out of LeBron and AD's hands. I would say your shooters, I'm probably getting them off of some screens, a lot of screens actually, nice and early, try to get them hot, get them going. But probably the biggest thing is getting it out of LeBron and AD's hands is what I would probably say. Like guys like Caruso, you're gonna have to live with that. Like somebody's gonna have to make them beat you with their other guys, take away their best weapon is usually what the playoffs is all about. LeBron and AD are a different level of guys, so of course they have more, like not only option A, B, C, D, they got E. So forcing them guys to use some of those other skills that they might not be as refined on, and just trying to get the ball out of their hands as much as possible, and you know, letting other guys kind of see if they can beat them and you know, take advantage of that. But I would probably also get some height in there. I'd bring in Myles Leonard, even if he can just get in there and be a bruiser, disruptive, you know, kind of tame Dwight just a little bit. I'm trying to do that. I'm also exploring the idea of seeing if I can get Bam at the four. I think it's a pretty tough matchup. I think if he can keep his hands clean, I think he makes the night a little bit harder for AD, which is gonna one of the things like hand in hand with getting the ball out of his hands, forcing some bad shots. But that's probably what I'm looking for from Eric Spoelstra in this next game coming up.
Carter, what's your adjustments for your Miami Heat in game two?
So, I mean, if I'm Spo going into game two, if Bam is out, I'm starting Leonard. If not, we'll keep Bam starting, but I'm starting Leonard. But defensively, I like just at times in this game going small, using guys like Crowder, Butler, Iguodala, guys just athletic, great defenders. We have good defenders on our team. I know they're not stopping Davis and LeBron, but who's stopping Davis and LeBron? You speed up guys like Caruso, Caldwell, Pope. Don't let them get comfortable wide open looks. I almost think you have to, in a way, let LeBron and AD kind of kill you for their 20-25. You can beat LeBron. You could beat the Lakers with LeBron and AD 25-25, 30-30 even, I think. If guys like Caldwell, Pope, and Caruso aren't hitting or aren't comfortable getting the shots they want. You know, I know the tough part about that would be Rondo. The matchup against Rondo, speed Rondo up. He's been doing this for so long. But
right,
that's defensively. And offensively, something – this is – Coach, you even go over this with us. Duncan Robinson is out there for 27 minutes, didn't score a point. He had three tough threes that I didn't expect him to make any of these. When he's getting the ball against the Lakers, they are blitzing him with two guys. If he can make a quick decision, a dump down pass to a roller two or three times, they will stop blitzing him and he will get the shots he wants. I need guys like that. And even the same with like Hero. I just need shooters to be ready to shoot. But if you break down the Lakers defense, you got to break them down somehow. I don't think at one time the Lakers defense was challenged by our offense last night. We don't have the studs like AD and LeBron, but I trust Spo to come up with something.
I think that's a good point. I was going to touch on that because if they're throwing two guys, exactly how I explained it. Nope, I'm letting them rock. That was great. That was a great point. I agree.
See, guys, I plant seeds and they grow. So before we talk about game two, I'm going to throw a topic that I didn't prepare you guys for today. Mike loves to do this to me on the podcast. I'm going to do it to you guys. And because it's about my Sixers, Doc Rivers has thrown his hat into the ring. He was in Philadelphia yesterday interviewing for the head coach's job and now has become the favorite. It seems like it has come down to him, D'Antoni, and it was Ty Lue in the mix. It sounds like Ty Lue is on the outside looking in and is now the favorite for the Clippers job, which if I'm Ty Lue, I think I'm a little happy about that. But anyway, Doc Rivers, Mike D'Antoni, who you taking? Sean, you kick this one off.
First, I'm going to say Philly's fan. He's a Philly's fan. Skip minute 38. Skip it. I'm buying here because I'm not a huge fan of D'Antoni in the first place. So I just think if they went with D'Antoni, they probably attract James Harden. I don't really like James Harden's game that much either. He's a talented young guy.
You play just like James Harden. No, you don't hit the shot.
I play like Kyrie, actually. I like to dribble. That's what I like to do. But if I got guys on my team that I can make better, I don't mind doing that. Harden, it's like it has to be him making the play.
So, but, Sean, I am going to cut you off. And not to be rude, but because the very subject we're discussing has changed. And Doc Rivers has gotten the Sixers job.
The notification has just come in.
Doc Rivers is the new head coach of the Philadelphia 76ers. We are breaking news here on the All In podcast.
Breaking it.
Unless you're listening on the audio, unfortunately, you probably saw it on Twitter first. But Doc Rivers is headed to Philly.
I like it.
You look shocked. What's your thoughts?
Well, not shocked. I think he watched the game. There were reports he watched the game with the Clippers brass last night and stuff like this. And so, if I'm a Clippers fan, I'm happy about this. I think Doc can bring a level of culture and stability that maybe Brett Brown did not have, a stern voice that maybe Brett Brown did not have. The reason I was going to say, if I had to for this team, I would have picked D'Antoni for the idea that I'm of the mindset I'm shipping Embiid and I'm giving Simmons the key in the D'Antoni offense. Spacing out, get shooters, Simmons up and down. I think that is your best chance, and I just don't see this. Even with Doc, I don't care if you give him Pop. I don't think this Embiid-Simmons combination I just don't see it. The mix just isn't – I don't think that's championship caliber. Not the talent-wise it is, but just not the fit.
Yeah. I mean, so me personally – as you can see the Waj tweet here on your screen. Me personally, I wanted Doc Rivers over Mike D'Antoni as a Sixers fan, simply because I don't believe Mike D'Antoni is a championship coach. Even if he's certainly the better fit for Simmons. Like if you wanted to move on from Embiid, Mike D'Antoni is the guy that you would want to bring in to do that. Elton Brand has stated that he doesn't want to do that. So them really entertaining him to me was strange. And what I really didn't want to see was Joel Embiid spending his entire season next year on the three-point line. So, you know, with the way that Mike D'Antoni coaches, that was highly likely. So I'm a little relieved. However, I'm not a fan of Doc Rivers. Like I talked about it here on the show. I don't love Doc Rivers. He's
so disrespectful.
No, it's not great. It's not that I don't like Doc Rivers. Like he's a top seven coach in the league. But like he's really more 5-7 than he is in that top five discussion. And it's because he has a track record of blowing leads. He's blown multiple 3-1 leads in three different decades under three different presidents. Name them: Bush, Obama, Trump. The guy has blown a 3-1 lead. Don't matter who's in office. But no, in all seriousness, that's an issue. You know what I mean? When you watch a team that he just coached blow a 3-1 lead to an inferior team. I don't think the Nuggets were as good as them, as great as they played throughout this, you know, bubble. They laid an egg. He couldn't get the best out of his two best players. And that makes me wonder if he's going to be able to do that for Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid. I do think he's an upgrade from Brett Brown, so I am happy about that. I don't think that's even a question. I think Mike D'Antoni would have been an upgrade from Brett Brown, even though it hurts me to my soul to give Mike D'Antoni any kind of praise with his coaching philosophy. But I think even Ty Lue would have been an upgrade. So, but really, if we're the Sixers problem is much deeper than who's on the sidelines at the end of the day. So I'm not mad about the hire. I'm not jumping for joy either. Because something needs to be done with this Al Horford contract. We need to surround Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons. If you're really hell-bent on keeping both of them, you need to put some shooters around those guys and figure it out. And also, maybe the one thing I might like about Doc Rivers is maybe he gets Joel Embiid to buy in a little bit more defensively as far as guarding the pick and roll, you know, because I think Embiid is pretty awful in that situation, and that's literally what the Celtics killed us on in the first round, and and pretty much every team in the NBA will kill you on if you can't defend the pick and roll. So that matters, you know what I mean, at the end of the day. So, Carter, why don't you jump in here, give us your thoughts on Doc Rivers taking over my pathetic Sixers.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to talk about being awful at something. That's Brett Brown at his job. But I mean, so Doc Rivers getting hired, I think you have to be happy with it as a Sixers fan. I actually was gonna say D'Antoni before this came on for the same fact that I think they're gonna try and run it back with the exact same team, and I think Rivers is gonna try. Or Brand is going to convince himself that it was all Brett Brown's fault, which I also don't think it was that either. I think the team is just terribly constructed.
Yeah.
So I think they're going to go through another bad year, and then we'll have the same conversation next year. I think if D'Antoni comes in, he is not coaching that team. I can tell you that right now. He's not having Al Horford and Joel Embiid spacing the floor. Like, changes were going to be made. That's why I was going to go D'Antoni. But I think this is a good signing for now. You got to make moves besides just the coach.
Yeah. So I still think there will be changes. Who knows what they are now? I think they were more obvious if we were to hire D'Antoni, because I think you're essentially at that point saying that you don't. Shout out to my guy, Matt McCleary. I think you're essentially saying if they did hire Mike D'Antoni, you're definitely saying that Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid can't coexist, because you know what offense is coming when D'Antoni comes. I think Rivers is a little more flexible. He's coached a lot of different types of teams. But really, I think the biggest thing he brings is leadership. He does, hold players accountable. So I think that's another good thing that he's going to bring to the table is accountability, something we talk a lot about at Columbia. I think Doc Rivers brings that to the table. And maybe he is better for Ben Simmons' development. I don't know. You could argue that D'Antoni would be, because he would force him to shoot threes. But, I don't know. I'm on the fence. I'm wishy-washy about this. But I am glad to see, that we got someone better than Brett Brown.
Why? You tired of running dribble handoffs?
Yes, I was sick of running dribble handoffs for guys who either couldn't shoot or simply just force-feeding J.J. Redick on dribble handoffs. So yes, we'll probably see some new plays in Philadelphia this year.
Yeah, true. Honestly, the coaches don't even matter. They don't even matter.
Embiid to buy in. I mean, that is the biggest adjustment that they can make. Like you said, if Embiid buys in, maybe gets in. Like we always say this, but a different coach, maybe he gets in better shape. He, doesn't have some of those just lazy mind farts that he always has. Whatever it is, if that's the impact that he can have, then this will be the best hire, but we shall see.
Yeah. So you heard it here first.
If you get Al Horford out there at head coach, and they're going to win more games.
Listen, Al Horford has a very high basketball IQ. It's not that far fetched. No, but
like 4-3 the game.
Well, let's move on. If you're tuning in on the live now, see here. You heard it here first. Breaking news, Doc Rivers headed to Philly to be the head coach. Let's get back to the NBA Finals. We're going to close out today's show and talk about Game 2 coming up tomorrow. So we talked a little bit about adjustments for Miami, but let's just give some quick thoughts on what we are predicting or what we see happening here in Game 2. Carter, will your guys bounce back and get a win here in Game 2 to even up the series? Assuming at least Bam is healthy. Let's assume Bam's healthy.
So that's where I was going to come in. I was going to say if all the guys are healthy, I feel really good because I think the Heat just bounce back so well. They have that fire. They're all underdogs. If you look at the entire roster, those guys are not supposed to be where they are right now. And even Hero is drafted like 13th. But with Dragic being out, Dragic, that's the leading scorer. I think people forget that. He scored. Yeah. He was scoring the most points out there. I would even say, in the postseason. I would like to say we could come back. I think it's going to be a closer game. I think Spo's going to have something out there, but I have something different for the Lakers. But I think fourth quarter, I think that's where LeBron and AD go to work no matter what we have out there. We could have probably 6 or 7 guys on LeBron and AD are going to go get buckets in the fourth. So I think it's closer, and I don't think we give up a 75-30 run in the middle of the game, but I think the Lakers take game two.
Taking Lakers. All right. Sean, who you got in game two and why?
I'm taking the Heat. I'm still riding with them. This is obviously contingent on Bam playing. I think Bam is going to play, hopefully. I think they make adjustments. I think they find a way to get their guys going early on. I think they kind of speed up. I think they kind of limit those other guys like Caruso, Danny Green. I think they force those guys to beat them. Hopefully they can knock Braun off of his shots or something. I'm sticking with the Heat. I think they bounce back. They're resilient. They're good. I like them.
You sound like you're picking with your heart more than your head.
Don't mind me.
All right.
Don't mind me.
Todd, game two, who's taking it and why?
So I can't go with the Heat. I think this is good. I think the Lakers get this one. I agree. I think it's going to be closer. So the spread right now is 9.5 Lakers. I think that the Heat can cover. I think it'll be a closer game. I think that there'll be the spurts where we think that maybe Miami has that chance. But I believe what Carter said. I think in the fourth, I just can't see a way that they can really answer AD, LeBron back to back to back those crunch minutes. But I think I will say this. I think it could mirror something similar to the Miami and Celtics series in the sense that I think that the Lakers might go up 2-0. But I could see Heat getting game three, make it a little interesting, and then they have that chance to maybe 4-6. But
yeah,
I can't. I just think the blow from the way they lost last night and the injuries, this is the first game without Dragic. I just don't think that they can make enough adjustments in one day to really be able to compete with the Lakers who are rolling right now.
Right. I think that's why the adjustments are super, super important in this game. I think if they fall into that 2-0 range, I think this series is done in five. I think Spoelstra might know that too. So I think they got to make some big, big changes and be able to ride with them down in that fourth quarter down the stretch. Obviously, we didn't get to see that this game because they got blown out. But I think that's kind of what they're going to have to lean on and get their guys going early and often to keep up with those guys. So I think this is the pivotal game because typically it's game three. You usually want to win game three and kind of get yourself back into it. I think this game is more important for them to take home for the Heat. That's why I think the adjustments coming up are going to be big. So,
yeah, so I'm actually on the fence on this one because I think Todd brings up a good point. You only have one day to make these adjustments. And not only do you only have one day, you have to figure out the health status of Bam. I think you're already preparing to not have Dragic, especially for this game. But what adjustments are you making your adjustments with or without Bam? You know what I mean? So it does throw a little bit of a wrench in the decisions that are being made. And having only one day to do that doesn't help. But even after game two, they will still only have another day to make those adjustments heading into game three. So I think Sean makes a valid point that if they go down 2-0, I think it looks a little bit bleak there at that point. So I'm going to take the Heat in game two. And here's why. I'm going to take a reverse psychology type of approach here. And here's why.
Drawn off.
Here's why I think the Heat, if there was ever a game for them to steal, this is why. I think your backs are against the wall, and if people weren't already counting you out before this series, they've certainly written you off now, and with the makeup of this Heat team, that fuels them. So I think we see another level of aggression that they come out with in game two. Like I guarantee we see them get off to another hot start. And like Carter said, we probably don't see another 75-30 run this time in that second and third quarter range. I think that's going to give them the confidence and, you know, enough to come out with a win here in game two. I also think whatever adjustments that, you know, Spo is going to make, he's going to have to factor in. He's already planning without Dragic. I think you're pretty certain that Bam's going to play through whatever injury he has.
Yeah.
But I think the key adjustment that he's really going to have to focus on is getting those shooters going. Like, the way to beat teams that have a size advantage on you is to stretch the floor, right? So, like, Bam being hurt and playing less minutes could ultimately actually be a slight benefactor to them on the offensive end, because Myers Leonard is more of a stretch five if he has to play more minutes, and so is Kelly Olynyk. You yeah. want to pull guys like Dwight away from the basket defensively. That's really your best chance. And then if he can't guard in pick and pop situations, you got to take him off the floor. So now he's not an offensive rebounding threat, right? So you got to go completely contrarian in some cases in order to, you know what I mean, try to combat what the Lakers' strengths are. The other thing is I don't think the Lakers are going to hit 15 threes in game two. I don't think they're going to shoot it as well. And when their role players are missing these shots, it's not only going to hurt their confidence, it's going to give the Heat more confidence when they're getting more stops. You know what I mean? So I think they're going to have to focus more on making these guys take out shots, taking outside shots and living with that. And when those guys miss, the Heat will be able to get out and run in transition. And that is a confidence booster right there.
Yeah.
So then the last thing is complacency, right? After a huge game one win like that, it's almost natural to have complacency set in for the second game, right? Because you're kind of you're automatic, and then you're seeing the injuries, right? And I don't care who you are, if you're a human being, you're like, oh, we got this in the bag. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, to the media, you're going to continue to say job's not done, but you're not going to play with that same aggressiveness that you played with in game one after winning by such a large margin and knowing that some of their best players are hurt. And I think that actually works in the Heat's advantage. So especially for game two. And again, I think the Heat will approach this game with a little bit more desperation and come out with this one. So I'm going to pick the Heat mostly because if they don't win this, I think they could get swept. So I'm going to give the Heat game two here. I wouldn't be surprised if I'm wrong, but I think this is their best chance to steal a game and stay in the series.
I got a matchup that I don't think we really have discussed yet, that it will be, if Kendrick Nunn starts, Rondo's got to feel that. I like Kendrick Nunn. He's second in the Rookie of the Year rating, but if you watched him in the bubble, I mean, he came off COVID, whatever, I don't know how much weight he put on that, but right. His defense has been bad. I mean, like, Malcolm Brogdon was cooking him, like, you know, Kemba Walker wasn't even a contest, like, he couldn't play in that series. And not yeah. saying Rondo is Kemba Walker, but Rondo's got is so smart, a veteran. I think he could get Nunn's head.
Yeah, Rondo.
Nunn and Hero both have never seen a bad shot in their lives. So you can see these guys. I mean, they could both. That's where I don't know. I could see that going downhill. And I think that's a matchup that scares me the most. Leonard isn't great, but I would like to see him get out there. I mean, especially if Bam's not playing, you have no option. But he does stretch the floor good. And defensively, I think it's got to be a game plan thing. People are going to have to step up and play defense that normally can't.
Yeah. And maybe, you know, just game two adjustments for Spo could be, you know, kind of what Carter mentioned, is go super small and run that 2-2-1 press that they like. You know what I mean? Especially if Rondo's not in the game, maybe you run that press to get the ball out of LeBron's hands, you know, to force other guys to not only bring it up, but bring it up against pressure. And also that takes time off the shot clock. So, you know what I mean? I think there's a couple of different things that the Heat can try to throw at here. Like, I think they kind of have to get a little bit crazy with it as far as some of the, you know, adjustments that they're going to have to make. And I think we see that here in game two. We've seen that 2-2-1. They ran it against the Celtics. Maybe they pull it out here in game two against the Lakers to, you know, try to generate some energy, some stops on defense. All right, so you heard it here first. Again, Doc Rivers headed to the Philadelphia 76ers. We're 2-2 split on you know, the Heat or Lakers winning game two. So if you're tuning in or you're watching the replay, leave a comment on our YouTube channel or even if you're watching in on the live right now, leave a comment. Let us know who you have taken game two in this series. But that wraps it up for today's show. Todd, any last thoughts that you have for the people watching in today?
Four chips seals it. LeBron's the GOAT.
Interesting.
I'll piggyback off of it. That's not true. So, but I would say Bron definitely top three. I don't got too much else. Shout out to my man T, bro.
Yeah.
Prayers up for Tito. Carter, any last thoughts?
I got have two more things, and one's just a little question for y'all. Do y'all think, and this is going around in the media, do you really think the Celtics would be a better matchup against the Lakers? Or does anyone believe that?
Maybe.
If the Heat's healthy, no. I mean, I like, know. If the Heat are healthy,
I just felt that a little disrespectful, but.
Yeah,
I don't know, because
they couldn't figure out a zone LeBron figured out in that, 8 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think. And the Celtics are smaller than the Heat.
Yeah.
No. So you're talking about getting,
on AD?
Yeah, right. Yeah, no, I think the Heat are the better matchup.
They deserve it.
If there is one in the East, I think I would argue that the Raptors would be a better matchup for the Lakers than the Celtics would, because they're just so small.
Yeah. And if there was for a game for Jimmy Buckets to go get 40, it's game two.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So we'll see.
I think I'm on board with that. No, I don't think the C's match up well.
Yeah. So that wraps it up for today's show. So thank you guys for tuning in to another episode of the All In Podcast. If you are watching on YouTube, make sure you hit that subscribe button there that you see on your screen. If you're tuning in on the audio versions on Apple, Spotify, Google, Anchor, wherever you get your podcasts, make sure you leave a like, a rating, reviews are nice. Those kind of things help us pop up in searches, things like that. So any support you can give to the podcast, we appreciate. And thank you guys again for tuning in to another episode. We will see you guys again on Monday.
Peace.
Deuces.